Well, good morning, everyone. It's lovely to see you here this morning. My name is Anna Ambrose, and on behalf of Design Centre Chelsea Harbour, I'd like to wish you a very warm welcome. Before we begin, please can I just ask you to make sure that your mobile phones are switched off. Thank you. So to our conversation this morning, we are discussing the creative challenges of working with colour, which, of course, is very much in keeping with the theme of focus this year. I'd like to introduce our moderator today, Sarah Miller, founder of Sarah Miller & Partners, and I'm delighted she is joined by three leading advocates from the world of design and architecture, Hugh Leslie, Richard McConkie, and Abe Rogers. Please do join me in giving them a very warm welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. It's always a pleasure to be here at Focus. I've done several talks here, and every single time I have the most wonderful panel. So it's my huge pleasure to introduce Hugh Leslie, who is the founder, principal, and director of Hugh Leslie Design, working largely in domestic interiors. Rich McConkie, who is the associate director of Universal Design Studio, a practice based in East London, the other side of town from here, and who've done hotels, art installations, exhibitions, and they'll all be telling about this. And Abe Rogers, whose studio is even further east, but also has a range of, and is the founder of Abe Rogers Design Studio, and has a range of projects from big major art galleries that you'll have heard of to tiny little bespoke retail shops in Mayfair. So I'm going to kick off the session. We'll be discussing the art of colour, the design of colour, the challenges, what practical tips we might be able to offer you in your own homes, but actually how colour can transform any space in different ways. So just to kick it off, Hugh, why don't I start with you and ask you what you think sums up your philosophy of colour?
Colour. I think I always encourage people to be adventurous. I think you can't have too much colour. And I think people often don't include enough colour. So I'd always say to people, be adventurous and go beyond your comfort zone.
Very good. Richard, what about you?
Well, colour in our projects, probably colour is an element, part of the recipe, like light, texture, tone. It's just a piece that we use to try and create an atmosphere. And for me, colour's in everything. Colour's in all materials. So it's using those things to create a feeling.
We'll come back to Richard's philosophy on colour, and you'll see why when you see the role of film that's about to come up. Abe, what is your...
So it's similarly, a colour for us is a tool. We use it to try and engage kind of different psychological responses to spaces, whether it's getting people to engage or to get calm or to lose or to dematerialise the architecture. We use it in a very similar way that we may choose metal or wood, for using different hues, different saturations.
So you can see how colour obviously affects our moods. I mean, here we are. This the first set of pictures that you'll see on this loop that will just play continuously in the background is Abe's practice and some of his work. Then I believe you'll see a load of slides from Hugh's studio, and then you will see Richard's. It'll be clear because Abe's got his name on it, and then there's Hugh's, and then there's Richard's. I believe that's the order. Let's start with you, Hugh. Because for most of us, colour at home is one of the trickiest things to get right. Mm-hmm. It's okay when we visit a hotel and we can, you know, enjoy fantasies for one or two nights, or when we visit an art space and you can get immersed in different colours. But the intimacy of colour in your own home, how do you work with clients on that basis?
How do we work? So you have to start somewhere. So, and obviously, different rooms have different purposes. So a corridor or a guest bedroom or a bathroom has a different requirement to something like a living room or a kitchen or a family room. We always encourage people, you have to put a stake in the ground somewhere. So you have to make a commitment. So where do you start? So often it's with the carpet. You decide what the flooring is going to be. Are we going to have a simple square of matting, in which case it's probably neutral, so we have to decide on another colour, but a carpet's often a good place to say, well, let's actually make some sort of commitment, and it's putting a stake in the ground. So you've got to start somewhere, and then it involves.
So you start with the feet upwards.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, exactly. And often it's a case of people, you start off thinking about a scheme. I generally encourage people to be adventurous and use as much colour as you can, because we're certainly in a home, it's a different requirement to a commercial or a hotel situation, but you need to include lots of colours, I think, because especially by the time you've got life becomes into it, people's books, objects, paintings and things, having too few colours can end up feeling a little bit sterile, a little bit not terribly friendly, not very homely.
So you're an integration of lots of different colours, working with people's personal objects. Abe, I've always seen your work as integrating colour in blocks and sort of powerful accents, if you like. Tell us about, if yours is integration, I see Abe as contrast in a sense.
I think we use it in different ways, but certainly here, what we just saw, which was a digital revolution, we're trying to create a completely immersive environment where you're dealing with technology. So the architecture, which changes, wants to fall away. So using a colour like ultramarine, it's hard to focus on what's solid, so it becomes much more ambient, and so you concentrate much more on the objects rather than the space. You feel the colour, but you don't concentrate.
And these are exhibition spaces that you're talking about. This particular one.
This is in Liverpool, FACT, which is about the new observatory. So we want it to be very dark, but here is more domestic, and we're trying to pick up, you know, a piece of coral. We're interested in quite complex colours as well as very strong primary colours to play with different languages. And then this is Into the Unknown, which is sci-fi. So you have a whole series of very dusty colours that you get lost in. But working with the objects. But you never know what people are going to wear in a space. I think we have to be careful not to be too bespoke, because someone might come in with a green jumper, and if your space is too precious and people within a domestic sale, you can't use that colour because my space should all be about white. And then do you stop people not dressed in white coming into space? I don't know. I think you need to be able to play.
Now, on that note of white, Mr. Richard McConkie over here has just ordered 10,000 gallons of paint. I'm not allowed to mention the brand name. But anyway, 10,000 gallons of paint for Frieze Art Fair. And in your view, whites, greys, black, all the neutrals, I would say, are colours. Come and explain to these, by the way, on the screen, just in case you don't know, are hues, interiors. And we'll be coming to Richard's in a second. Explain a bit about neutrals being colour.
For the galleries, there's white is white. Yeah. And that's another thing. Okay. And there's a certain colour called gallery white, which is a very specific white. Yeah. Quite neutral. It is quite neutral, but all of the other colours, like blacks and greys, there are no neutrals. And, you know, depending on the paint company, everyone will give you different degrees, but there's no such real thing. It's how the light is reflected in the room and how that interacts with that colour.
The temperature of the bulbs.
Even fluorescent bulbs means you can't actually see colours. There's a thing called colouring rendering index, and a really rubbish light bulb means you can't actually pick up certain colours. So there's no such thing as neutrals. And I think what we're really interested in is using nuances of little colours in different areas to create atmosphere and effects in a similar way to your work.
Explosions. Yeah.
There was a brilliant exhibition at the Design Museum, actually, by a woman, a designer called Hella Yongarius. I urge you to look her up if you're interested in colour. And one of the smallest exhibits was a light box, and she had electric pink, electric orange, electric green, say. And as she changed the lights, so the green went orange, the purple went yellow, the colour changes were extraordinary, and as you say, lighting is so important. I mean, in everyone's domestic interiors, you know, we were in that room just now, and the way the light hits one corner and it's dark and it almost looks grey, it hits another corner and it almost looks like a vibrant pink. How do you work with light and colour in people's interiors?
We have meetings generally during the day, so you tend to look at colours during the day, and we always say to clients it will change at night. But that we work on the lighting design as well, so unless you have decent lighting, as other guys were saying, the colours don't read at all.
But you were... I was sort of interested in how you choose colours, because I normally look at colours like this.
So when we're having a meeting, we're looking at, you know, because we all start with a table and we've got all the samples in front of us. The first thing is we look at carpet samples, we were talking about before, floor samples, this close, but in reality, the floor's way down there. Yeah. So we're looking at something this close to us. And also, when you hold materials horizontally, the light bounces off them and they appear brighter. But as soon as you put a wall colour vertically, the light reflects off in a different way and it becomes darker. So it's always very useful. And that's why, you know, everyone does tester pots these days, so you can paint up a sample and hold it in different parts of the room in different lighting conditions to see how it's going to look.
So it also really depends upon the finish. If it's glossy, it responds very differently to the light. Yeah. If it's matte, you know, with matte you can really pour light onto colour and it absorbs it and becomes richer and richer. Which can be really
and the size as well. A test pot painted this big feels a different colour if it's painted this big. Totally different. Yeah, yeah. And the mass of it, the mass of colour changes sort of how you perceive it too. And I think that's always...
Now, what I'm interested in...
Because we always paint big samples, and then we want more samples and more bigger samples.
Yeah, and what I'm interested in with you, of course, is that unlike a home in which one lives, you know, 365 days of the year, which is the kind of clients that you're working with, you're often creating, should we say, fantasies for visitors to different cities or different resorts for two or three nights you know, how much do you play to the kind of guest who's visiting, or how much do you want to work and create something that's new, fresh, and slightly out there?
It all depends on the hotel and the brand, but I guess often with a hotel, exactly as you're saying, you're only there for a day or two, so you want to have a different experience for that place than you would at home. But still, you have to do the same things that make a place feel cozy or warm or energizing, and it's always trying to get that balance between those things and make it work for night, because most people arrive at a hotel at night, tired, and then wake up in the morning, and then you need to make it work for all of those different...
And presumably for when it's pouring with rain or when it's sunshiny and all those other things that stuff.
And then you've got the vagaries of working a different... You know, I'm doing a hotel in Denmark at the moment, and the light there is so specific that all of the colours that
and
we so tested in the studio...
It changes what time of year it is.
Totally, yeah. So you have to, you know, exactly like stake in the ground, you have to make a move on the colour and be strong and... then adjust different elements within that whole recipe to make things balance out. Mm.
I was reading an article this morning in Business of Fashion about the new Jill Sander that's just opened, and they were quite surprised,
the John Pawson one,
and they were quite surprised because these days, you know, retail in a very difficult market is all about creating an experience, and I'm assuming that colour and texture and these kind of light and dark shades that we've been talking about are all there to create experience. How do you create experience with colour, Abe?
Well, I think you can create experience with absence of colour. I think John does that very well. Or the Jill Sander shop in New York, which is fantastic, which is designed by, I can't remember what the woman's name is, on Crosby Street, which she just uses reflection and white and things disappear. So I think, you know, it's really about setting up angles and creating a narrative that you experience as you go through the store. Fashid's store on Dover Street for Victoria Beckham, you know, I don't think there's any colour in it at all, but it has one of the most powerful retail experiences, and the clothes, I suppose, start to become the objects, but it's more nearer a kind of museum experience than it is a traditional retail experience.
And of course you did the Comme des Garçons with those. Tell us a little bit about the power of red and Comme des Garçons.
We did Comme des Garçons in 2001 when fashion really wasn't engaging in colour at that point, and Comme des Garçons was very famous with three colours, three shades of black.
that's true.
And she wanted to use colour, but the colour wasn't certain. I think halfway through the project, we'd always done it as red, and for us it was really clear. Red's an amazing colour because it has the same density as black. So when you know, cinema seats are red because when the lights go out, it absorbs light at the same rate as black does. So it has that powerful colour. It kind of is distill. It has so much behind it. It's blood. It's politics. So we had this store always as red. And halfway through the project, she said it couldn't be red. And for a month, we argued. And she wrote very few words because she's super cool and she's a kind of goddess and doesn't need to.
Well, she's also Japanese and doesn't really speak English.
I think it's her. I think that's her attitude in any language. We'd get these funny. Anyway. And we just continued to say
there
it should be red. Yeah. It must be red. It should be red. And at the end of the month, she said, I was only joking. I wanted to see your response. But we said it couldn't be red. And when the shop was finished, she announced that red was as powerful as black. And that was a huge moment in fashion. And we were really young at the time. But this is a very different red in the Tate Modern, which has got quite a lot of pink in it. And it's quite... But we found this amazing sample, which they use for motorbikes. And with motorbike colours, you use lots of translucent layers. So you can build up... It becomes about craft. You can build up these amazing velocities, and you look into them with these different metallics, because each layer is translucent. You can't do that with fiberglass and stuff. So we were trying to translate this very, very complex colour into... a fiberglass, and the Tate really got upset with us when we couldn't quite nail it, but we did eventually get quite close. But it becomes, you know, you find samples and you try to match them. If they're really complex, it becomes difficult.
Have you ever had the problem of trying to match a colour? I mean, I hear all kinds of people mentioning the dreaded words elephant's breath and God knows what else, and can you please match this, you know, country house style or whatever it is. What happens when a client is so definite in their views and you feel perhaps they could be enlightened a little? I mean, how do you manage that relationship?
Looking at paintings is a great place to start because right. You know, often people have an idea about a colours. People have very strong opinions about colours they like and colours they don't like. As I was saying earlier, often the more colours you can introduce, especially into a home, the better because, you know, as Abe was saying, people wear different colours, so colour comes into a house all the time. So looking at paintings is a great idea because if you look at a gorgeous painting, you'll see that it generally have lots of colours in it. And there might be colours in that painting which you don't necessarily like. You know, some people say, I just can't deal with blue. But you look at a wonderful painting and say, well, there's blue all through this painting, and don't you like the painting? And immediately people's sort of preconceived ideas about colours, they slightly dissolve and think, oh, yes, actually, they can see that, you know, the composition looks fantastic, but individually that might not look all those colours.
I'm always saying everyone smiles when they go outside and it's a blue sky. So how can you say you don't like colour? It's ridiculous. The grass is green. Everyone's don't complain. Today, oh my God, get rid of that green grass.
Exactly.
Play football on a white lawn.
Richard, you've done, a bit like Abe, you've done retail stores as well as exhibition spaces and, of course, the brilliant Ace Hotel in London. And now at Six in Stockholm. And you've got a few more hotels in the pipeline, I understand. can colour help what I call, a technical term, user experience? Another word from it is the customer journey. And to the likes of all of us in the room, it's how you kind of explore a space or take a journey.
Totally. Your Mulberry, the store on New Bond Street, is set up that there's these little different pavilions within the space of different materials that are very different colours that create different visual experiences throughout that space. So one whole collection is housed within like a brass cube, and the reflected light from that warms up that whole corner and draws you to the back of the space. So we often use that, as Abe was saying, as a tool to help you get through a space. And in a hotel, it's all about creating kind of a sense of coziness or warmth or tension or what have you. But colour is that a very important part of that.
Do you have certain colours where you want to, which you want to use to induce a particular mood? I mean, is there a colour that a magic colour that would make me spend more in Mulberry, for example?
Probably gold, probably brass. It was brass a few years ago, but then brass became everywhere, so right. Then it kind of changed.
Right.
I don't think there is a magic colour, and it's all based on context. You know, when we did that store in Mulberry, which is quite old now, everywhere on New Bond Street was like the Gucci fit out, black, highly glossy, very aggressive, and so we did something that was light and fresh and quite calm, and that was a reaction to that context. Was now, I think, when Fade is an amazing store in a few weeks' time, there'll be something totally different. Mm-hmm. And I think as a designer, you're always responding to that context and trying to either difference or synergy or tension. Or
if you walk down Mount Street, you can see the similarities in store to store, with a few exceptions. Christopher Kane.
Yeah.
You know, it is a lot of similarity and quite cautious at the moment. But when you guys opened Stella on, you know, it was a completely different feeling. Suddenly to have this lightness, this very bespoke print appearing in places.
I always say we never would do the same project now than we would. 2 years later, you would do a different project because the world has changed and you've changed.
Well, and it's
always a moving target.
Mm. Yeah.
We're not trying to, as designers, looking towards the future. We're trying to do now.
Mm-hmm. But trying to create a bespoke solution to a specific problem.
Exactly.
Problem.
Well, you see, I think that's interesting because one would expect in art galleries and certainly in retail and fashion for things to move very, very fast. I mean, you know, Labour's law, you don't hit it right and you're out by you know, a P&L that doesn't work, frankly. But when it comes to homes, I mean, do you feel that things are moving fast? Do they move as fast in people's homes as they do in say, retail and art galleries?
No, I don't think so. I think if you design a home well, I think people will be happy to enjoy it and live in it, and it will evolve with them. You know, you can change things. As I said, if you've made a commitment to an expensive carpet, well, it's going to be there for probably as long as you're going to be in the house for.
Yeah.
But in terms of pictures, art, objects, you know, upholstery, these things can be changed reasonably easily.
So would you say that you're designing a colour palette that will almost last a lifetime, whereas often you two are perhaps designing a colour palette that has to be changed? Or do you not even think about that when you're creating
things? I mean, Comme des Garçons, I think, is still there, you know, 18 years later, you know, the Breuer Whitney in New York for me was the favourite museum ever, favourite gallery ever, and that, you know, and that is unchanged in 50, 60 years. So I think, you know, I think it depends. I think there's a fad, and retail is bad. You know, Selfridges needs to continuously renew itself, like a snake does its skin, in order to keep. I mean, I'm not saying that Selfridges is a snake, like at all. They're a very good client of ours. But it's fine. I'm thinking about something that changes quickly. Yeah. And that becomes its nature. But then we have to find very sustainable ways to do it. And interesting enough, now anything you do in Selfridges has to be done in a sustainable material, so it can be replaced.
Really, we try and use old materials. That, you know, the Brick at Ace is an old engineering brick that is the only maker in Britain who still makes that thing, and it's just a brick that's fired at a normal clay that's just fired at higher temperature, which turns it blue. And then when it gets wet, it turns purple. It's amazing. So we're trying, you know, that will outlive us all.
That's authenticity to an extent, which has longevity by its
nature. Well, it also has good storytelling properties. I wanted to ask you about the Britishness. Do you think there are British colours? I mean, you talked about that British-made brick. But is there an inherent, as it were, national identity toolkit of colours? Do people, because you've worked abroad, I mean, is there...
I don't know, I think there's nuances. I think when you, you know, I'm working a lot in Scandinavia at the moment, and they just have a very different approach to colour. And they're just
It's blonde,
well, not just the people, but what they would be using their interiors, and actually a lot more kind of bolder than we would be over
here. Yeah, so also they're dealing with a lot of darkness in the winter.
Exactly, and they need to be somewhere that is...
of energy.
Yes, and I think it's all related to context. So, so weather is... we always talk about weather.
Yes, we were doing a lot of work in Finland, and the number of conversations we had, we need light, you know. I mean, it was quite remarkable, actually.
But really interestingly, in this, at the building tour the other day in Copenhagen, refurbishing an old 19th century like palace, basically, and the heritage architect had scratched through the paint layers and found 20 different layers of paint underneath. But what was quite interesting is like the colours about 200 years ago were pretty much like elephant's breath. And very, you know, to contemporary eye, they were quite modern colours. Mm. But the furnishings at that time was crazy, really crazy, really patterned.
I mean, the Wallace collection, I don't know why I'm pointing down here, but I mean, Wallace has got crazy colours, totally, you know, with extraordinary paintings hanging on it. And you know, tell me it's not a brilliant gallery, maybe. I mean, it is a brilliant gallery. Mm.
So all of this stuff is necessarily nothing new, but I think how you put those things together are the thing that
this yellow, thing. This very strong yellow.
That's brass. So
That's just brass. So that's light off brass.
Light off brass. Yeah. And you see, at six is almost an absence of colour. And with this project, we're trying to make a project that would last, unusually for a hotel, 15 years.
That's unusual.
Unusual. Yeah. So everything's tried to make it last. Real materials that age. You know, that white granite. Yeah. You know, that stone there, that has these amazing flecks of red that kind of flick through it. And it's actual rust. It's an iron oxide inside the marble that creates that colour.
Beautiful.
And I find that stuff fascinating.
But the most exciting colour often is the colour that comes from the colours. It's the bouncing light that bounces off the red carpet and creates a pale pink across the white walls. And if you have a warm kind of wall, then that pink becomes more affected. Or the having mirrors near windows, so light bounces and affects the colour.
And colours do change too, don't they? Because you choose a wooden floor, but with time, with light, the colour will totally change. So you choose a sample and you look at it now, in 5 years' time,
it's gone
with
darker.
Light on it, it's totally changed.
Yeah, sunshine. I've got a carpet over a bit of wooden floor and there's a lovely, great, sharp line
take up your floor mat and it's...
I've got an old table covered in paints that I painted things on. I love it now because it's just got all of the scars.
The scars of the past.
If you were sort of, there's a huge business. Lee Edelcourt's probably the kind of at the foremost of sort of colour prediction and, you know, what is going to be the hot new colours, whether it's in fashion or textiles or interiors or paint colours or whatever. I mean, at the moment, I'm seeing a lot of neon everywhere. I mean, I'm working with a paint company and they're terrific. They have a whole range of kind of bespoke paint colours. But do you see trends coming out of colour? I mean, are you going to a blue phase by any chance? Are you in a pink phase? I mean, you know, do these things
always
happen?
Always in a pink phase.
I'm always in navy phase. So there we go.
Yes, Rich's idea of colour is a socks. Yeah. So
you hang around long enough, it comes into fashion, I think.
Exactly.
So people like Lee Edelcourt or Future Lab, and when they're sort of predicting interior trends, do you pay much attention to them in your design work at all?
Ooh. I don't, unfortunately. No, I think
excellent.
If something is too common, you try and avoid it. generally, because we're trying to look for the next
answer. Exactly, we're trying to be ahead of the wave.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
Trying to.
Yeah. Oh, so in fact, they're following you guys, these colour predictors.
No, we're not saying
I wouldn't advise that, but there you go. Yeah. No, I think it depends on the project, but some projects we do are very temporary, and you just want to make a moment, like freeze the moment for a week. Yeah. Gone. Yeah. And then others are about trying to do 15 years.
Yes, how do you make people feel calm in the space? I mean, one of the things that I love about colour is that, as you said, energy or feeling calm, contemplation, being able to stand in front of things, or just feeling super up. I mean, looking at some of these things here, but when you said spaces to feel energised in, mm-hmm. how can you describe something where you've energised people?
I think Abe's work is probably better at doing this than me, to be honest. Yeah. But it is. It's like this project, that pop of red is energy. That contrast creates energy.
Okay, how would you calm them down with your wife?
You calm them down.
Yeah.
Well, I think a good example, at Freeze, which is crazy, all of the crazy art. We do a restaurant every year for Peacham Nurseries. And inside that, Peacham Nurseries, if you know, based in Richmond, incredible florists.
Yeah.
And all of the walls there are painted like a light mid-grey, but has got a lot of red in it. It's quite pink. If you looked at it against a white wall, it would be pink. Mm-hmm. But you put green against that pink, and the green just pops. And it just calms everything down.
Oh,
and it almost acts like you've turned the
lighting
down.
The grays are so interesting that way, because they really play with the frequencies. Yeah. And you can set secondary things off them. And they
I think grey is a great colour.
So people thought...
It needs to be a complex grey with red hues in it or with blue hues in it.
But it's that contrast. And in that space, it feels like you've turned the lights down by using a different colour. Mm. And that's the sort of thing that...
And do you see people sort of literally slowing down and
it's quieter.
Quieter.
It's quieter.
I love that.
Whereas in a louder space, people do...
Completely.
Yeah.
Colours look totally different against what the background is as well, because often if you put a sample against a white background and then you put the same colour sample against a grey background and you show them to people, you'd swear they were totally different colours. I've done the same thing myself. You think, it's not the same colour. So what you read a colour against, and we often look at against colours against pieces of white, because all the paint charts are all against white.
Yeah.
But as soon as you take that piece of paint off the white background, it totally changes.
So what is the best background to look at colours against, in your view?
Against the context of what they're going to be seen in. So if you're working in a house and you've got timber floors or a carpet or the colour of the walls, so you need to build up the scheme with all those colours you're working with, because that's the environment, that's the context they're going to be seen in.
Okay, that's a good tip. I'm going to take that one away with me. There will be, I just want to say at this point, no intermission, but there are plenty of moments for you to stick your hands up and ask questions. Please don't feel shy. We want you to be as involved in this conversation as possible. So if anyone's got a burning question at this stage that they want to ask, otherwise I'm happy to talk about colour. To the end, ad infinitum. But do feel that you can ask a question of any of our panellists. How important do you think texture is with colour? I mean, you obviously use a lot of, all of you use a lot of textures. You mentioned brass, you're obviously using fabrics and carpets and things. Abe, you're using often very hard, shiny vinyls and fiberglass and things. Now, those are very different textures.
We use quite a lot of paint, and we use fabric as well, more and more.
But does the actual fabric absorb colours or change it in the same way as
depending
on a hard
is.
Surface?
The absorption of colour is really exciting. When very matte things drink light, I love it, and it becomes... It starts to light radiates back from them.
And the other way around, glosses reflect light. Silvers, there's no such thing as silver because it's just reflecting what's around it. So it's all that context. Texture, light and colour are all working together all the time.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just looking now at some of Hugh's interiors and picking out, the blue of that painting, and I can see that you've touched on it in the cushions and perhaps some of the baskets and some of the carpets and everything. So
this room here, we painted the ceiling this very dark blue, and it can be rather fun painting ceilings' colours. And it's often everyone thinks the ceiling's got to be white, but it's a nice way of introducing another colour. And if you paint a ceiling a very dark colour, it actually almost makes the ceiling disappear because it absorbs a lot of light. White reflects colour, so as soon as the ceiling's painted white, you're aware of where it is. If you paint it a very dark colour, or black even, it almost disappears.
Well, this picks
black
up
is
on...
harsh.
Black
whenever
is tough.
We never paint ceilings black. We always do, I'm sure you do the same, a bit of warmth
in
off
black,
it.
But I'm interested that painting a ceiling a dark colour makes it disappear, because I have this sort of crazy idea that somehow painting rooms a dark colour makes the space appear smaller, or is that absolutely not true? Look, they're all shaking their head. Great. explain how colour affects space.
How does
it makes it disappear? So it...
yeah, well, the colours absorb the light, and so it's harder to define where that space is. So, and especially if you use an absorbent paint like a distemper, which is totally absorbent, so the light's absorbed, so it's actually much more difficult. If there's a white painting or a picture on it, obviously that your eye focuses on that, but the light is absorbed, then the space actually becomes less easy to define.
One of the areas of a house that I always find very difficult in terms of colour is fireplaces. Mm. Because if it's a real fireplace, people always paint the insides of fireplaces black. That's something obviously to do with the soot. But it just looks like this kind of great big empty black hole. Mm. It's horrible somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't quite worked out how to treat fireplaces, but anyway.
Fireplaces, because if a fireplace is used frequently, which unfortunately these days we can't because we're not allowed to use, so that's where, if a fireplace is always being used with logs and things, it was always covered in soot, so that's why they were painted.
Yeah,
well, naturally it would just be black because that was the colour of all the soot and things.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's my bête noire at the moment. I don't know what to do about it. Go pink. But in hotels, of course, you don't have those sort of practical considerations because it's effectively a service department, so you've got some people, you know, bringing
you.
But
it has to wear. You know, imagine a house that someone different is staying in every night.
So are there colours that wear better than others?
Yes. White is bad for obvious reasons, right? Anything that shows marks.
Yeah.
But of course, the painted dark colours are very good for certainly in a small hotel room into making. If you don't see the corners, it makes the room can feel more enlarged. Totally.
And ghosts can't hide in the corners.
Yeah.
They won't hide in the corners?
You can't find your keys or your hotel room, you know. You lose your wallet in darker rooms.
Yeah, I'm always losing my keys in dark rooms. That's an absolute nightmare. Let me throw it open to the floor. Come on, there must be some questions in the room about colour, even if it's just to do with something practical in your own homes. Anyone got any questions? No? Really? Very shy audience, my goodness. Is there anything that anybody wants to ask in terms of, I've got this problem and can you help me solve it? Because sometimes that's really useful. Free advice. Three great people up here. No, okay.
What colours are your 10,000 gallons of paint?
It's white.
It's all white.
It's gallery white.
Gallery white.
Gallery white.
But gallery white is really specific. The galleries are
It's not white, is it?
No, it's
quite warm.
It really is specific, and I can imagine getting 162 galleries to agree on the white as well. Mm. That is quite a thing. Mm. But there's a certain company that they've got the market. But everywhere that's not a gallery in Fries Art Fair, if you do go in a few weeks' time, is not white. We make every other colour, every other space.
Well, you're going to have a neon pink wall in the restaurant
in
River Cafe.
River Cafe, yeah. Mm. There's a big blue entrance sign that sort of matches the branding. That might be quite crazy. It might be hard on the eyes, but it's only there for a week, so why not? And we'll see.
Yeah. No, I urge everyone to go to Fries because I have to say, gallery white doesn't look like white. It's quite extraordinary how the colours change, and then you get
especially
the paintings.
You've got so much daylight coming through as well, which you don't normally get in galleries so much.
No, it's an extraordinary thing. What I'm really interested in here is the fact that you can also use concrete as a colour.
Yeah, of course.
Which is a brilliant colour, absolutely brilliant. And most people shy away from that because they think it's too industrial.
But again, if you just think of it as a colour, what is it? It's a grey, a mid-grey, and concrete is a mix, like a cake of different aggregates. And those aggregates can be, they could be coral stones or white marble or anything.
Sardinian granite or...
anything. And then you polish it and it becomes shiny and it reflects light. So I would want to encourage anyone to...
I'm quite interested in... You talked about this at the beginning of the talk about when you look at things in distance. I mean, I was in Korea, not this week, last week, and there was this extraordinary bridge which looked from a distance with all the greenery around it like it was electric pink. And the closer we got to it, the more it became more of a kind of coral, soft peach. It completely changed colour. Mm. And that was just distance and the sort of narrowing out of the eye zones of all the green that had made it absolutely kind of pop and electric. So if you want to make impact in a room, do you go for a focal point? Do you go for ambience, overall look and feel? Or do you try and just sort of hook them in with one wow thing?
No, I think certainly in a room, in a domestic interior, it's really the feeling of the room.
And
it's created by everything. It's created by
all
the things all together.
Yeah.
Colour, the textures,
yeah.
And the light. So it's something that you live in permanently. It's got to feel fantastic.
Whereas I sometimes see colour as almost like signposts. You know, I'll meet you by the pink wall. Mm. I mean, think of the Paul Smith shop in LA, which has that ginormous wall that is the most Instagrammed.
Well, that's a really clever use of colour.
Well, I'd pick you something like Freeze. I'm sure I'll meet you by the yellow sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, meet you by the yellow sign.
You'll see
exactly.
There's different areas that the youth area, the young galleries area, it's got a very pale carpet, which again reflects more light and makes the whole space feel even more brighter, slightly more bombastic. And that is for that reason. Mm-hmm.
Do you have particular, from any period in history, but do you have particular artists or designers whose use of colour you really admire? It could be a painter, it could be a designer. I'm going to ask you all this question, actually.
David Hicks has been mentioned a lot recently, but he was one of the, I think, the pioneers of use of colour.
David Hicks.
You know, in the 60s, and he said, you know, all reds go together. And he was brave and adventurous. You know, he put all reds together, and remarkably put a lot of reds together. They look fantastic against each other.
Yes,
so he was great at sort of getting people to breaking down people's preconceived ideas about colour.
I like that idea of all reds together. Yeah. I think of all blues together. Yeah. What about you, Richard?
At the moment, I mean, it's always a changing thing, isn't it? Yeah. Howard Hodgkin is the master for me. I mean, if you saw his last works at Gagosian a few weeks ago, incredible. And I know he's got his last prints are showing at Frieze somewhere.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Frieze Masters, no doubt.
Yeah, Frieze Masters, definitely, deservedly. Frances Up Richard, I really like her work, yeah. Ricky Swallow's really good. But probably like yourself, I find looking at contemporary colour, the way artists use colour combinations, I find quite inspiring. So that's the sort.
And of course, colour fades over time.
And changes.
And
comes in and out of fashion as anything
absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Abe, what about you?
Well, I don't know. Agnes Martin, I think, is amazing when she plays off those very soft colours and they become completely transient. The 8th floor of St Mary's Hospital is Bridget Riley. Well, she's done 3 floors of just incredible stripes. And it's in the horriblest kind of industrial hospital corridor, and the colour of her stripes is completely transformative to that space. And I think as far as the power of an artist understanding architecture, it's super interesting.
I'm fascinated about the link between colour and health. I think the link between colour and health and how it can uplift you, make you sort of stand taller, make you just feel generally physically, I'm not claiming any medical properties because I might get sued, but I think it makes you feel better.
We're working in St Mary's paediatrics and we're using loads of colours to get them away from this kind of endless kind of beige nothingness, which just becomes sad and gets worn out and has scratches and stuff on it. You know, if you have beautiful things to look at, you get distracted from all the other things that are around it, and you feel much, much calmer. We've done a waiting room for the early pregnancy in Harrisworth Hospital, you know, where people are very worried and terrible things are happening. So you need to distract people. If you're sitting in a space which is feeling very unloved, you feel unloved by it. Mm. And calm colours, soft colours in those environments, as well as the acoustics, you know. But colour is one element of a space, as is the way the space sounds, the way the light enters the space, the way that it smells, you know. All completely affects the environment. And I suppose that's what as designers we have to try and do, is, as you said right at the beginning, it's a recipe. We're trying to cook up a little dish, and we need to keep, you know, we want to taste a bit of chilli or a bit of basil popping through, but we also need some calm notes along the way.
Colour is cookery. There you go. I always think of colour as, you know, delicious bowls of textured fruit or something like that. I just love those.
Peach,
yeah. Mm. Amazing. Mm. All those different things. Mm. And I think one of the most enjoyable things about colour is actually this sense of calm and well-being and joy. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I mean, as you say, it's blue sky outside. Why not enjoy it? But there's also something really nice about kind of grey days where you just sort of want to hibernate. I mean, colour does funny things to you.
Yeah, you want it soft light, which can be quite beautiful.
Yeah.
The sea in winter is incredible, just when it's all really stormy and flashing around. That's a really different experience.
And we're working with Pete Aldorf, the gardener at the moment. He gets really excited by his gardens in the winter when everything goes brown into all these different shades of browns. He says you mustn't ever prune everything. You need to keep everything there and allow it to die.
Piet Udolf is from the Netherlands, right?
He is from Holland.
Holland.
Did the High Line.
You're doing the High Line with him. That's interesting.
No, he did the High Line. We're not doing the High Line.
No,
the High Line's done. Yeah. Well, I need the High Line too.
That's how rumours start.
Not at all.
And Have you done things on a small scale as well as a big scale? I mean, what's the biggest house you've ever done?
What's the biggest? We did a large country house, which we finished last year, which is about 13,000 square feet.
Boy.
So lots of opportunity. When you've got a lovely big house, the wonderful luxury is that you can say, well, actually, we can afford to use lots of colours, and you can almost concentrate different rooms, especially if you've got lots of guest bedrooms. You can concentrate different rooms, can have different themes, which is rather more fun. So it's not someone's bedroom for 7 nights of the week. So if you're staying in someone's country house as a guest, it's rather nice to actually have an experience which you wouldn't have at home. So maybe you can be more adventurous and sort of commit yourself to stronger colours as well.
We once had the most amazing good fortune to stay a night at Chatsworth, which was completely wonderful. And they had, you know, all their beautiful grounds and everything else. But each room, a bit like a Venetian palazzo, was a different colour. Mm-hmm. And in it was contemporary art and artefacts and pottery, and it didn't really matter what the colours were. You would never have thought these colours would have gone together. When you're choosing colours, are you trying... Matchy-matchy is always a very bad thing, I think, but that's a big value judgment. Are you trying to match shades, contrast, clash...
Depends.
Provoke?
All of the above.
All of the above.
It depends on the situation and the context, really. The recent Picasso exhibition at the Tate Modern was absolutely fantastic, because the way Picasso used, you know, sometimes quite a few colours, but very strong colours, but the colours were offset by large areas of not a lot of colour neutrality as well.
Yes.
And the way he was playing off what Matisse was doing at the time. Again, you look at Matisse pictures, and his use of colour was absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Oh, my goodness, all those cut-up paper shades.
So inspiring.
I'm worried about how people learn about colour. I mean, one of my big bugbears is how the history of art is being taken out of schools and everything else. How, Abe, you've just had a new baby. How are you going to introduce her to colour? I mean, I think we should all learn about colour from a very early age.
Well, I mean, our very good friends of ours who are curators, they only dress their baby in white, which is a very curatorial stance on it.
And
maybe gallery, and not that, and not that practical. But, you know, in the same way as you talk about when you're furnishing the home, you know, different colours make the baby come alive in different ways, make her eyes pop out, her hair look a different colour. You know, so I think by using it, my daughter's doing her... oldest daughter's doing her A-levels art, and she gives the baby a paintbrush and they sit there painting together. So I think by colour being a familiar part of it, you know, when we moved into a new house, my daughters both chose the colours of their bedrooms and then had to paint them themselves. And the 13-year-old chose flamenco pink, and the 15-year-old chose slightly more emotionally deficit dark midnight blue, and these are kind of represented their moods.
And do they want to repaint them now?
We have repainted recently.
Yeah, there we go.
15-year-old who's now 19 has white, and the 17-year-old has a very pale pink, quite sophisticated.
I'm very impressed at this evolution of their emotional trajectory one way and another.
So I didn't get them to paint it this time.
Do you have to do specific children's rooms, talking about kids?
Sure, yes.
Yeah?
Most of our clients tend to be families. I'm always a little bit nervous when clients are going to bring the kids in to choose their schemes, because... Kids, you know, their favourite colour often tends to be what their best friend was wearing as a dress yesterday. So, you know, deciding to go down a particular avenue when you're spending a lot of money, entirely up to them, but, you know, if you can bring colour in with... things which are easily changeable. If the kids are going to repaint their rooms, great. But, you know, if someone wants to go all one colour and you're making carpets or you're putting fabric on walls and things, they're rather expensive commitments.
And you're trying to gently persuade them that perhaps this isn't a good idea. Yes, you know, I can imagine.
Fantastic. You know, have lots of colour, but let's put a huge pinboard on the wall and we can paint it a colour. And then they can put up pictures and posters and things, and as their moods and their tastes change, that can change as well.
Yeah.
So.
Well, of course, everybody has personal tastes and choices that they make. And you work for lots... Well, you all work for clients, but Richard, you work for some of the very, very demanding clients, I was going to say, and hotel owners. And I was thinking about Alex, lovely Alex, at the Ace. But, I mean, did he have a strong... I mean, owners have a strong sense of what they
totally.
Want.
Totally, and when you're working for a personal client like that, he definitely had a sort of... he was attracted to a few different colours, but later in the project... we found out he was slightly colourblind, which implied some of the colours. But he loved army green, and he could see army green, and he loved army green. But that works really well as a very good, you know, army green is for his clients, ace. You think how many he grew up what's it called, putting gigs on with Nirvana, you know, yes. All of that kind,
yes,
of, yes, all of those colours were part of his history, you,
yes,
know, the old faded army surplus wear. So that was part of a colour that he liked and had a personal connection to him.
Mm. Yes. Mm. When you're in the office, though, I mean, a bit like that dress that various newspapers showed, that some people saw it white and some people saw it dark blue. I mean, that was kind of amazing to me. But do you find that people see colours differently when,
yeah,
you're
totally
talking about them? Yeah,
totally. And also different designers. Everyone, I read this quite scary thing a few years ago, that everyone sees colour as a slightly different timber. So what I think is red, it's probably not what you think is right.
No.
So we're all sort of seeing it in our own
Absolutely.
Minds.
Absolutely. I've got a husband who, I swear to God, would tell me that those glasses were green. And I'm thinking, are you really colourblind? It's very odd. But maybe they are green. Who knows?
But interestingly, a few colours like work together, I think. And that's probably like you. We work with samples quite a lot and large scale and doing it in the place. And some things feel right and some feels don't. And that's where you've got to go with.
No, it changes often. At the end of a project, I go freak out and want to repaint everything. And then it
Do
opens
you?
And it's fine, yeah. And my team knows me quite well, and they...
Calm you down.
Mm. Well, sometimes
what colour room do they put you in to calm you down?
Yeah, exactly. Red.
Some people don't always see colour as well.
No,
some people... a lot of us are visual, and we tend to be in our business, but some people... They experience and communicate through listening and hearing,
yes,
things. And I did had a client recently who really couldn't see colour, and I had to explain them. So every colour I'd show him or fabric, and what colour is that? And I realised that he actually couldn't visually, I don't know what colour they looked like to him, but I had to explain what they were. So I had to say, this is a soft blue, it's got quite a lot of brown in it, it's quite a mellow colour, and I literally had to explain.
Did you have to almost sort of, as it were, create a poet or write poetry for her?
I had
the colour of Wales, if it was a grey in a petrol sea.
His wife was visual and she could see the colours totally. She knew straight away. But for him, I had to talk each colour through.
Was he a numbers man by any chance?
He was a doctor.
A doctor.
So,
okay.
So he wasn't in the visual world. So
interesting.
But it was I thought he doesn't actually, he can't see the colours. But by explaining it to them, he was comfortable.
Yeah, I think there's a whole other area for, you know, the idea of dyslexia, dyspraxia, surgeons, three-dimensional viewpoints. I mean, the way that colour kind of alters things.
And some people like to feel things. You know, a lot of people, when you're looking at samples and fabrics and colours, they have to touch them. Mm-hmm. So they can look at them, but until they touch them, and a lot of people, they need to. It's the sort of kinesthetic experience. So it's, you know, they have to touch every sample.
I have a sensual, very strong smell association with colour. I mean, I was in a big concrete building not long ago, and I've been long finished, but I swear I could smell the concrete. I mean, it was just, you know, the colour of that grey was definitely a concrete smell. It was extraordinary.
I read this thing on chromesthesia, which certain musicians have, they hear colour.
Yes.
Frank Ocean and Mary J. Blige are kind of, and apparently Van Gogh and Renoir, they heard colour, and they associate colours with sound, which is crazy, right? They see like a yellow sounds a certain way.
Well, maybe that's God, let's not do anything drastic like that. Last opportunity. Oh, good. Somebody brave enough over there.
Well, I was just wondering, when you have like a new... Oh, thank you. Thanks. When you have like a new project that you're starting and you have sort of like a blank canvas, so to speak, where do you start? How do you pick that first color to then build off of?
Instinct.
Right, okay. Yeah. So
pretty
you've
much.
Got that.
I think
following something.
The project, there's something to respond to. So
A colour you like.
Do you like it when clients say, I mean, I read a wonderful biography of Ettore Sottsass, who was a master of colour too. I mean, he was great. And his first... His first wife, Fernanda Pivano, was a translator. And at one point, Ettore was trying to design a ceramic, I think, and he said to his assistant, a very young James Irvine, remember James, you must find me the wedding dress that Fernanda and I, she got married in, because I want to match the exact blue of that wedding dress, you know, and he dispatched, and that became the kind of basis for the whole of that ceramic and everything else.
It was a film director who matched, the Italian film director, who matched Sophie Loren's eyes, I can't remember exactly the story, to have the car painted in the colour of her eyes, which was exquisite.
Amazing.
Yeah, exquisite. Exquisite. Any more questions? One here. Great.
It's kind of the same question, sort of. So again, blank canvas, is colour your starting point, or is it an object or textures or the lighting? Where do you start?
All dependent. I think for me, you have to start with what you're trying to achieve or what you're trying to make the feeling, and then some things are given, like the light, and then you attach that light. Or colour can be the starting point on some projects. You decide it's about that thing, but it really is.
I think for me, the starting point is a diagram, and the colour can be part of that diagram, but it's trying to explore how we're going to use the space and what it's going to become. But quite quickly, we can arrive at an attitude to the colour, which we then will.
The thing is, there's no such thing as a blank canvas. I think that's the hard, probably in my world.
I think we're designers, not artists. I think that if the artist has a blank canvas, and I think we come with a corrupted canvas, which we then. But, you know, when we did the blue opticians, when they came to us, they wanted in a beige shop, and we spent time educating them, and at the end, they were super proud of their shop.
The blue shop is actually a very nice opticians. It's pretty good, actually. There's a question here in the front.
Have you ever had a project where the client has been adamant they want a colour scheme or whatever that you really hate and really struggle to work with? Like, how have you gone about dealing with that?
I did warn you that the challenge question would come up.
I haven't, actually, no. It's, people often have a preconceived ideas, but once you work with people and you develop a relationship, the colours, the whole conversation evolves. So yes, you know, someone might have a particular idea to start with and say, well, perhaps we'll park that for now and we'll talk.
I think often you can show people better ideas. Some people have preconceived ideas, and often what we'll do is we'll show them that, and then we'll show them alternatives. Yeah. And generally,
alternatives... It's a journey of education. You don't win every battle, but if you are you're convinced and you can justify your conviction, you can win quite a lot of the battle.
And you think of like a colour like blue, right? We lack the language to explain colour. Think how many blues there are, how many different variations there are. Mm-hmm. And there are good blues and ugly blues and beautiful blues.
God, yeah, there are some ugly blues.
All yellows.
So some ugly blues can be good blues
in the right thing.
In the right situation, exactly. Yeah.
So all of those things are, I think...
But when we did the Tate Modern Red, Nick Sirota was really determined he wanted it blue, and Vast Blue was really wrong because the hues of the oak had these red, and it made a much more sensible language. And with some experiments, he agreed. When we were doing Nick Knight's exhibition at Somerset House, we were going to do all the steelwork in fluorescent pink, and ended up being white, and we lost. But it was not, it was not beige, which would have been the...
Not beige, no, okay, fair enough.
Everyone was scared of Mulberry being too light, and grey concrete, everyone was scared of concrete, but that concrete is quite pinky in a way, it's quite dusky.
Yeah, and it worked
with the really good lighting.
It's exquisite, the pink.
No, I mean, mushroom pink is actually the colour of concrete for me. It's an extraordinary colour.
Mushroom is an interesting colour.
It is an interesting colour.
I've seen a lot of mushrooms.
Sort of brings nature in to you. Any... One more. Yes. God. You see, I'm completely losing track of time now. I'm being...
When you choose colours, do you pay attention whether it's North Facing Room or...
Can you just say that a bit louder again?
When you choose colours, do you pay attention whether it's North Facing Room or South, or just pure intuition?
Natural light in a room,
absolutely.
And which way the light's coming from.
You have to know where the light's coming from, and whether it's in Scandinavia or China, it's really, really different.
And it's easy to... Yeah.
But which country are you in? Here. Okay.
Well, if it's bluer, if it's a north-facing room, the room will be bluer, so you need...
Warmer colours.
So I have a south-facing house, and I use a lot of very, very vivid yellow to bounce light off, and then a bit of red.
So I think...
Do you have a north, south, east, west-facing house?
Because it will look like a pale blue.
I think you should never ever listen to rules like that.
No.
I think for me they're completely... you need to be aware of the light, and you need to play with what you want to, because maybe you want... But anything that says you should never do, you should always do.
And actually, light now will be different.
I know several artists, because of course the big rule is that artists like north-facing light, and it's true, obviously, to a certain extent. But... Actually, I know a lot of artists who do amazing colour paintings, and they work in west-facing rooms, studios that has no natural... I mean, all kinds of things. I think you have a point, Abe. Rules are there to be broken. And on that moment, before I break the rule of our 45, 50 minutes, I think unless there's any more questions, I have to thank our guests, Abe Rogers, Richard McConkie, Hugh Leslie, for the most fascinating talk. I could talk about colour for a long time. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you very much for coming, and I hope you come again.
I'd just like to echo those words. Thank you, Sarah, Hugh, Richard, and Abe, for such an engaging and animated conversation. It has been such an insightful colour journey. The design of colour, the art of colour, colour and mood, colour and light, and how you use colour to create an experience, colour in your home, and how colour can totally transform places and spaces. It has been such an inspiring hour, and you have so generously shared your valuable experience and insights, and we are extremely appreciative. So do join me in thanking them one more time. Thank you very much.